I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Johnny Moe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass, hit it!
Magic!
How's it going, everybody? Hope you're having a fantastic week and looking forward to the Easter weekend. It's Gavin Casey with you here, and you are very welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly. It's a massive weekend on the rugby front. Ireland hosting Italy in the Women's Six Nations on Sunday. So if you're in the vicinity of the RDS and at a loss at what to do for your afternoon, why not pop along and help them to try and break the home record? Only a few hundred tickets shy of smashing that mark, as far as I know. And that's going to be a really important game, obviously, for Scott Beaman's side. Just off a call with the head coach, actually, and he was explaining some of his selection calls and basically stressing the need for Ireland to make their mark on the attacking front this weekend. Keep your eyes on the 42 for that match preview on Sunday. We dug into the game as well on Wednesday for our subscribers with Kieran Kennedy. He was over at a media day with the team, and Wednesday was a little bit of an emotional episode of Rugby Weekly Extra because it was a day on which we bid farewell to our colleague of almost 5 years, Owen Toolan, who has taken a role with Joe Schmidt and the Wallabies. Owen is going to be Australia's new skills coach and head of analysis. So he joined us for the podcast for a final time until we Shanghai him onto another episode when the Wallabies visit these shores again in November, that is. But it was a really fun chat with Owen, just getting his perspective on the new gig, how it came about, any trepidation he might have about taking a national role all of, 12 years after he had departed the Irish setup, 11 years. And, you know, saying goodbye to him was tough. I'm not going to lie to you, but he gave a really cool insight into what it would be like working under Schmidt again. They previously only overlapped at Ireland by a month, and it was Joe Schmidt's first month in charge in November 2013, but they remained in touch since then. And yeah, Owen just gave us the lay of the land ahead of some fun times, we hope, for Australian Rugby Union with a home Lions tour next year and then the home World Cup in 2027. So here for the final time for the moment was Owen Toolan on becoming a Wallabies coach.
And obviously now with a little bit more experience under my belt, it's probably a little bit more nerve-wracking because you understand the scope of the role and I guess the amount of hard work that's ahead of us. So a little bit of trepidation there, but yeah, hugely excited. I think, yeah, particularly I guess I was fixated with the 2001 Lions series, like the Keith Wood line out down the left-hand side in the 22 in the Olympic Stadium with, I think there was about maybe 80 seconds to go. And like Keith Wood was my hero growing up. My Labrador was called Woody after Keith Wood. And yeah, the absolute devastation when Justin Harrison steals the line out and denies the Lions a crack at winning a historic series. And yeah, looking at it now, it's like, geez, I hope I get a Justin Harrison moment in a little under 18 months' time. So tables have turned massively, but it's such a big deal, the Lions series, isn't it? I said, like, 97 in South Africa, 2001 in Australia were things I really remember growing up as a kid. And as I said, fixated on the Lions. So yeah, it's going to be a massive, massive challenge on the other side of the fence now, trying to come up with a plan to make the series competitive at least.
It's an amazing situation to find yourself in. As you say, after a couple of years of having a 9-to-5 and doing the odd podcast, to be plotting against the British and Irish Lions in your adopted homeland, like, this is dream come true sort of territory, right?
I think so. And I think I remember vividly leaving Ireland in 2013 and had to make a little bit of a farewell speech in the week of the Ireland New Zealand game. And like, it was very mixed emotions leaving, because having worked with Joe for a short period of time, having an understanding of the players, I was pretty confident I was leaving a golden generation and that Ireland were going to go on and have a huge amount of success. So watching from afar, it was quite tough to go on and see Ireland obviously have probably the last decade the success they've had, obviously initially under Joe and then Andy Farrell. So I think the opportunity to work with him again and lean on his experiences over the last decade as well will be hugely significant for me, and hopefully lend my knowledge of the Australian landscape as well. I think Joe is pretty keen to bring in people that have been in the Australian system, understand the landscape, understand the players and the environment. So I hope I can probably add a little bit to the environment as well.
We have touched upon this in the past, and certainly when you had like that sit-down interview with Murray about a year ago on this podcast. But for newer listeners, newer subscribers, or people who may have missed that, the connection between you and Joe, it's in terms of your working together, is a lot shorter than a lot of people would imagine. Mm. Like, it was just that November in 2013, and then you went to work for Tony McGann,
yep.
And you build basically the data department in Melbourne. But you obviously made a bit of an imprint on Schmidt, the fact that you remained in touch over all of these years and he still feels as though you're a guy who can come in and help what he's doing with the Wallabies.
Yeah, we definitely stayed in touch over the years. Anytime he was in Melbourne, whether it was personally or for work, we'd always catch up and have a coffee. I think the circumstances also helped that I'm a qualified analyst. I've done a bit of coaching, live in Sydney, probably ticks a few boxes for Joe in terms of having staff available to start for him as well. But as I said, he's always made a massive impression on me, his analytical mind for the game and his encyclopedic memory of every game he's probably ever been involved in is phenomenal. I can see the positive impact he's going to have on Australian rugby. Like, the talent base is there. We do have, it's a small talent pool and one that we'll hope to widen in the current years. And I think Peter Horn's obviously a brilliant appointment in the high performance manager role as well. So I think Joe's impact can be significant and hopefully it can be pretty quick.
What is that impact to your mind? How do you see it playing out?
I just think his focus on the fundamentals of the game, the really key nitty gritty details that you need to be on point with, and the players need to have a good understanding of it. I think it's probably second to none. And as I said, the talent is there. I think they just need a little bit more guidance and a little bit more clarity in terms of individual roles and responsibility, how that fits in with the collective. And I think, yeah, even just from some early conversations and chats around players and the shape of the game, pretty positive, to be honest.
When you accepted the role, did you know you'd be coming back to Ireland so soon for a November test?
No, it was pretty ironic once I got sent the fixtures. And yeah, you're obviously always looking for a game in Dublin, and for it to be the last game in the November series will be pretty special. I just got the dart in here today. It's the first time I've seen the Aviva in quite a while. So yeah, it'll be a very, very strange and surreal moment going back into the away dressing room.
And I saw that you're recruiting as well on your Instagram story. There's a role for a data analyst who I guess will report to you, right?
Yeah, there's a bit of a rebuild, to be honest. It's probably a staff of up to 18, and currently there's about 3 or 4. So we've got about 14 to appoint between coaching, S&C, analysis, nutrition, medical, the whole shooting gallery. So it feels like a little bit of a startup. And yeah, I kind of referenced Peter Horn already. He's got a very good understanding of high performance structures, and I guess not just alone with the Wallabies, but having a more holistic look at analysis within Rugby Australia and ensuring that we got the right infrastructure, not alone just to service the Wallabies, but obviously the Sevens game, the Women's game, the Under-20s. Interesting enough, it's the first Rugby Championship Under-20s that's occurred will be this year in Queensland, which I think is hugely positive, given that when it gets to generally Junior Rugby World Cups, the Northern Hemisphere teams are coming off the back of a Six Nations, whereas the Southern Hemisphere teams might have played one or two games in the build-up. So I think that's really positive. But yeah, and another Limerick man, and Kyle Garvey, obviously heads up the data analytics across the whole business within Rugby Australia. So I've already had a couple of good chats with him. And yeah, we're really mindful that we put in some robust structures and build something that's going to last some time within Rugby Australia.
You mentioned you've already had conversations with Cahill, obviously with Joe. Has the hard work begun for you already, or when's the official kind of start date?
Yeah, official start date is mid-April, but obviously been along to a couple of games with Joe. Obviously building some metrics is to try and track players that within the Super Rugby system already, and collecting that data and things like that. So tipping away in the background, but it'll be full noise when I go back in April.
Does what you're going to be doing look any way different to what you would have done, say, with your last job in professional rugby in Japan or with the Rebels? Have things moved on while you've been working a normal job, per se?
Yeah, I would say the depth of data and analytics and how that's, I guess, received by the staff and the players, and how you build profiles on tracking players, has probably advanced And then, yeah, moving from the club game to the international game, your access to the players is somewhat different. So you're watching from afar, obviously trying to build profiles on the guys and understanding of their strengths, weaknesses, and how that combinations might fit, etc. So a little bit different. And yeah, technology has obviously advanced a great deal. The level of analysis and detail that and the importance that's placed on that is pretty important. But obviously, you want to be accurate with the data you collect and make sure it's going to be impactful in terms of how you want to play the game, how you want to set up your team, profiling opposition, etc. So it's probably my role is probably weeding out the not so important data and focusing on the ones that is going to make a positive impact. And then, yeah, from a coaching perspective, that's going to be probably new for me in terms of the remit in the broader skills role. So we'll probably sit down as a coaching group end of April, early May, and start to nut out like that with 3 days prior to the first test week against Wales. So just making sure we're really accurate in those 3 days and getting the right content in front of the group.
How do you balance those two aspects of the job then, on head of analysis and then skills coach? Skills coach to me strikes as being very much hands-on on the training ground, whereas being head of analysis kind of feels a little bit distant, as in quite literally in a perch somewhere, as you've been in the past. So like, how do you merge those two things?
Yeah, it's going to be, I had a little bit of experience with it in Japan as well. I think you're reliant on having a pretty strong team in terms of the analysis function that serves the Wallabies. As I said, I'm not going to be on my own in that space, thankfully. So probably getting the right resources around the team and then applying my kind of knowledge and expertise where I can and service the coaches and the players from an analytical point of view. And then that kind of segues quite well into the skills stuff, obviously having an eye for detail, doing the appropriate analysis on the individual stuff, and then getting on the grass and I guess applying that knowledge in a kind of kinesthetic, practical way with the guys.
What are you most looking forward to?
Obviously, you don't want to look too far ahead. I think the Wales test match in Sydney is the one right in front of us. And
off the record, what are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, like, as I said, the Lions series was such a huge thing for me growing up. I think that in 18 months' time will be hugely exciting. And then, yeah, having worked a World Cup with Ireland in New Zealand and the impact that had on a nation in terms of New Zealand was enormous. So a home World Cup as well is something to look forward to. But as I said, Wales in July, two tests, Sydney, Melbourne, and then into Georgia and Sydney again before back-to-back games against the World Championships and World Champions in Brisbane and Perth. So we won't be looking too far ahead, to be honest. But yeah, like I said, I think we've got 13 test matches this year. So a huge amount of work to be put in before the Lions series.
That was our friend Owen Toolan back in Dublin for a couple of weeks before he begins preparation for Australia's summer tests. And we're going to miss him on the pod. I'm sure a lot of you will too. And hopefully, as I say, we can drag him back on if Joe Schmidt allows when he returns in November. It's obviously a huge weekend on the provincial front as well. You've got Leinster hosting the Bulls in the ORC tonight, a top of the table clash. You've got Ulster heading to Cape Town, second game under Richie Murphy, looking for a victory, looking for a spark, just something to cause fans to row in behind them in a pivotal stage of this season. And then a really interesting game between Benetton and Connacht as well. What's that, 10th versus 9th in the table? Both teams really gunning for a playoff spot. Connacht in Treviso looking to respond to what was a real trouncing at the hands of the Lions on their own patch last weekend. And we got into that game with Bernard Jackman on Monday's Rugby Weekly Extra for subscribers. And let's just say, Birch wasn't best pleased by what he saw from the Westerners' perspective.
I'd say that's as bad a result as this season. That's the worst result in Irish professional rugby this season. And I think highly frustrating. I think defensively, the problem with Connacht is when they don't pitch, like, their level of performance is way off acceptable levels. Like, when they're emotionally up for it, like Bristol at home, you know, because of the Pat Lam effect. But normally when they play an Irish team in an inter-pro, they pitch and they look more than competitive. But then nights like Bordeaux, you know, which again, you should, first game of Europe, you know, you're up against the likes of Peno and Luku and Jalibert, and it's Champions Cup, which they fought so hard for under Andy Friend to get back into. You're in front of your home fans, it's Friday night, and they just disappeared. They just weren't there, you know, and that makes the defence look a lot worse, you know what I mean? Like, for sure, Scott Fardy will be able to tinker with the system and drill down into what's going wrong. But again, players go mad when you question this. But like, I do question their mindset and their attitude when you see them as bad as that. Like, the Lions aren't, they've improved, but they're a flawed team. They're so erratic, they're so chaotic. Generally an Irish team who, let's be honest, like, part of our strength is systems and being technically good and not giving teams easy into the game. Connacht were just, they were miles off. And I think for Wilkins and co, that's a massive setback for them, you know, massive setback. And I'm sure they're obviously constantly, the mental skills coach thing, like, some coaches would, it depends on, you have to get the right one. I mean, just having somebody there who has that position, is, that's easy enough to get. It's getting someone who actually has the credibility and the ears of the team, or the individuals in the team, and there's not many of them. Honestly, it's very difficult to get the right person. That and when you find someone like Gary Keegan or whatever, you hold on to him. You know what I mean? Or Caroline Curd, or what's it in Limerick? And,
Caroline Curd, yeah.
Yeah, Caroline in Limerick and Munster. Like, you know, when you hear players talk about Gary or Caroline, you know that they've had an impact on them. You know that they've become part of their process to perform, etc. But those people, like, they have limited capacity. You know what I mean? They can't be everywhere. So they only work with certain teams. So there's, and it sounds crazy because obviously we've probably produced or are producing more sports psychologists academically than ever. But the ones that are able to get sports people to listen to them are few and far between, if that makes sense. It's probably a failing on rugby players, you know, in general, you know, because effectively, you know, the theory and the logic, you know, that person A, B, C, D tell you, who are all qualified, is probably the same. But for some reason, players tend to only listen to a tiny percentage of the people who have the knowledge, if that makes sense. So, yeah, and again, I think, sorry, a long-winded answer is, I think Wilkins and co will be aware of it. They'll be trying to find ways of getting the team to be more consistent, and at the moment it's not working at the level that they would expect it to. So deeply frustrating. Sometimes those mid-table teams, that's kind of their life cycle, is they fuck up massively and then everyone goes, oh, they better get a reaction. And you do get a reaction and then you go, oh, fair play to them, they reacted. And then they coast along for three or four games. Then they have another, like, disaster, you know, and then they lose out in vital points and then there's big pressure on. And they kind of end up getting back to where they kind of were, which is just scraping into top eight or just missing out in top eight. You know what I mean? And I could see Connacht being like that, where they just kind of flatter to deceive the coast along. Like, I was really impressed with them, how they started the season, you know what I mean? So by the end of September, I was like, whoa, Connacht are proper challengers. And then they fell away, and then it was little bits. The Bristol game, I drove back to Dublin thinking, oh, they found the key, or they found the right recipe to get them ready. And then the other night, against the Lions, that's five steps back.
Well, you've made this point before, and I wanted to expand upon it if I can, or ask you to, rather. Like, 38-14 and the way that the Lions ran away with that game, and with 14 men as well, which shouldn't be understated, that does not happen to Connacht at home to Leinster, at home to Munster, at home to Ulster. Like, that game would not have played out in that way. They haven't had a result like that at home against any of those teams in probably 3 years. I know Leinster had a couple of heavy wins in Galway sort of pandemic times, but like with a full house, that does not happen to them against the teams against whom they can kind of generate that guttural, parochial sort of emotion. And like, that is an issue, like, you know, I don't know if it's fair to call it an issue of attitude, but certainly an issue of just of mental preparation.
Yeah, and like, look, I have to put a caveat that, like, they don't have you test those Connacht players in the gym, you test them on a running track, you compare their skill set to the Leinster players, just use them as an example because they're the most consistent, and there will be very, very little between them. But the work on for them is, or to make, like, the reason they're not more marked in Andy Farrell's squad is that ability to be consistent, or that ability to dig in when they don't feel like it. You know what I mean? And maybe that's why they were chopped or let go elsewhere in their career. And some, like Keane Prendergast, you know, takes that rejection and brings a level of consistency and performance that will get him on track for a great career. And others will just float, you know, they'll just float a little bit and not capitalise on the raw potential they have, or the raw talent they have.
That was Bernard Jackman dressing down Connacht, or maybe offering a sense of realism about their squad at the moment. And you know what? It's a game against Benetton that Connacht have to win, and it's one of those games where you feel they probably will win it. And that's just the way they kind of operate sometimes. Let's hope so. Munster hosting Cardiff. I didn't mention that game a while ago. That's the late game on Saturday, and that will be your lot. It is the 42.ie/extra if you want to sign up. Join us for additional podcasts every week. Two of them, usually. Three of them during international windows. So, for example, during Ireland's tour of South Africa, we'll have immediate post-match pods as well as our Monday and Wednesday entries. And when you sign up to get access to those podcasts, you also get full access to the website. I should stress that. So all of our features, analysis, interviews, all of the other podcast offerings like The Football Family, Gav Cooney's Behind the Lines archives, which have been popular for many years. It's all there for you. The 42.ie/extra. You can visit that and make your own mind up. For the moment, from me, that's it. As I say, have a brilliant weekend. If you're spending it with family, friends, whoever, enjoy it. And we will catch you subscribers on Monday, looking back over the Ireland game as well as all of those URC matches as well. If not, catch you back in this slot next week. So mind yourselves in the meantime. Take it easy.
But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Driver's got names for the two double barrels. Spits out.